documentary on the very powerful hallucinogenic discovered in 1943 by Swiss chemist Dr. Albert Hoffman. And in this next set, this next number set, we're going to go full circle. We're going to begin and end with Kraftwerk's song Numbers, the first version from Kraftwerk's Computer World album, and the terminating version from a really cool compilation of Kraftwerk cover versions by other artists. In this case, it's going to be volume 2 of Transwerk Express. And Pygmy Taxi Corporation is going to cover Numbers. And we're going to have the story of the discovery of LSD with Dr. Albert Hoffman telling you about that. He lived to be 100. I read his book about LSD. It's called LSD, My Problem Child. He had very mixed feelings about it, but, I'm going to let you hear him in his own words, mixed in along with the Cranberries and Green Day with two of their songs about numbers. For you here, right now, on WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Community, non-commercial, and even sometimes educational radio.
Hoffman reported his discovery to the head of the laboratory. One teaspoon of this new drug, LSD, could render 50,000 people temporally insane.
Marijuana has been an enemy of the state since the first federal law was enacted against it in 1937. Since that time, 20 million Americans have been arrested, convicted, and incarcerated for using the most popular drug in the world.
Sunshine. Be one of the few, the proud, the Marines.
Oh. it is 0.25 milligrams. Started is 0.25 milligrams.
Hoffman reported his discovery to the head of the laboratory. One teaspoon of his new drug, LSD, could render 50,000 people temporarily insane.
8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We are celebrating Friday the 13th here at WMFO in Medford with a numbers-themed plastic sushi, strawberries and thyme sound collage. That last set went full circle, beginning and ending with two different versions of Kraftwerk's song Numbers. Yes, a song that exactly matches our theme. First version was the original from their Computer World album. And the concluding version was an incredibly cool cover by a band called Pygmy Taxi Corporation, which I found on the perfect album Transwerk Express, Volume 2. And in particular, we heard a bunch of clips from a BBC documentary on the discovery of LSD, the powerful, very powerful hallucinogen, discovered in 1943 by Dr. Albert Hoffman, a Swiss chemist who lived to be 100 years old. And he wrote a book called LSD, My Problem Child. And then in between that, we heard from the Cranberries with 21 from their No Need to Argue album. And then Green Day with 86 from Insomniac. Backing me up right now is Brian Eno with the fourth and final track of his Ambient One, Music for Airports. Here's some more WMFO numbers to think about, specifically Bitcoin energy costs. Did you know a single Bitcoin transaction consumes 2,131 kilowatts of energy, which is enough to power the average U.S. household for 73 days? Comparing its climate effects with other forms of electronic payment, a single Bitcoin transaction creates the carbon of 2,634,835 Visa transactions. And a single Bitcoin transaction also generates 358 grams of electronic waste, which is the equivalent of more than two iPhone 12s. These have been some numbers to think about. What a waste of energy Bitcoin is. Yes, numbers to think about from WMFO in Medford. We are Tufts Educational Radio. So the next set is going to be another special sound collage for you. We're going to be hearing from the Penguin Cafe Orchestra, who was a loose assembly of various musicians. They were headed by this English guy, Simon Jeffs, who died in 1997. Only Jeffs and the cellist co-founder, Helen Liebman, were the core members. And the other musicians involved were drafted for the particular pieces or the performances by those two co-founders. Their first album, Music from the Penguin Cafe, was released in 1976 on Brian Eno's experimental EG Records label. And then there was a collection of pieces recorded in 1974-1976. And then in 1981, they released the album Penguin Cafe Orchestra, which is what we're going to hear from. And in this release, the band settled into a more regular release schedule. And they supported Kraftwerk in 1997, their first major concert at the Roundhouse. And then they went on to tour the world and play a whole bunch of different music festivals, particularly a residency on London's South Bank. The Penguin Cafe Orchestra recorded and performed for 24 years until Jeffs died of a brain tumor in 1997. So we're going to be hearing these pieces, numbers 1-4 from the Penguin Cafe Orchestra. And then my remix of three different versions of the Beatles' Revolution, along with a little bit of Led Zeppelin and David Byrne and Brian Eno. Yeah, that's going to be my Revolution 19, the Plastic Sushi Whole Lotta Hungry remix. And then we're going to hear Aphex Twin. And when I was a senior in college, I actually got bachelor's degrees in computer science and philosophy. And for the philosophy degree, I had a wonderful professor who would let me put together independent study courses. And my final one for my philosophy degree was essentially writing a short novel with a whole lot of vignettes, and I got really obsessed about it, and it was reflections on a lot of things, particularly in what you're going to be hearing, me narrating one of those episodes about an LSD trip, a very bad LSD trip, but one that ultimately proved educational and life-changing enough to recount for you this evening. And then we're also going to hear from Goldfrapp, their song Number One. And it all starts for you here right now with the Penguin Cafe and a very, very soulful song, these numbers 1-4, and I listen to this and, you know, it can just make me cry hearing these beautiful tones. Beautiful music, numbers 1-4 from Penguin Cafe Orchestra. Here for you on the Plastic Sushi Strawberries in Time Sound Collage on WMFO in Medford. Thank you.
Number 9. Number nine.
All right. You say you got a real solution. Well, you know, we don't love to see the grass. Got a real solution. Well, you know, we don't love to see the plan.
Brother, may it serve you well.
Maybe it's not
what?
Bad.
What? Oh.
Maybe even then, exposure is something that's so
just after me and John took it, Sue came up. Of course, it hadn't yet started to take effect, but right then, I got bad feelings. There's no going back, though. As soon as it's in your mouth, you've committed yourself, so to speak. Sue thought I owed her emotional support in her times of need, but I had decided I didn't want to sleep with her anymore. I didn't know how to tell her, so I just ignored her. After she finally left, red and blue squiggles began peeping out of the cracks on the wall. I didn't feel too good. My mouth was dry. I wanted to throw up. John turned on the TV and selected an empty channel. We watched the snow, waiting for a poltergeist. I slumped down in my chair, and the screen dripped to the floor. Thank you. just me and John, it didn't go that well. Paranoia set in pretty early, and although John tried to talk me down, it was a traumatic experience. But when we came off it, I realized how absurd it had been. Dan came over and asked us how it was. Powerful stuff, we told him. He was pretty interested. It didn't take me and John long to convince ourselves that it would be a lot different if we were doing it with a pillar of stability like Dan. We took some more and began setting up our toys. Candles, aluminum foil, and Kool-Aid. We lit the candles and turned out the lights. I put on Tangerine Dream, and we waited. It felt a lot better to start with. John sunk into his chair and smiled behind mirrored glasses. Dan sculpted aluminum foil. I watched the movie. I saw a face in the speaker. Who was it, I wondered. Who did I want it to be? I answered. Like everything else, it's what you want. Dan invited me to join him in a candle. We dipped our fingers in the hot wax, examined them as it solidified, and then melted the wax off in the flames. As our ritual developed, I realized that the pain was only as real as you wanted. But because it was real anyway, Dan and I were sharing something important that John, sitting over there, wasn't. And John knew it too. So I suggested that we go outside and look for it. It, said John. What is it? Dan liked the idea, but John wasn't sure. He was afraid, and I was afraid, but I wasn't afraid of my fear like he was, or so it seemed, or so I hoped. Because I really didn't know what it was, and I was sure John didn't, because that's why he was afraid. But Dan seemed to, because he wasn't afraid. But he wouldn't tell me what it was, or even do more than just hint at it, because he thought I knew what it was, or so it seemed, or so I hoped. So we went outside and we walked in the shimmering slush, in which there were these marvelous arabesque patterns that I felt bad about stepping on and breaking because they were so 3D, until I realized that you couldn't break them, you could only change them. And John wanted to know if we were coming to it yet, so I asked him if he thought we were coming to it yet. Dan liked that because he laughed, and I knew it was me and Dan against John. And where we were then, the field was below us about 30 feet. So I told John, it could be over the edge. Why don't you go look? But he was really afraid, more so than before, which was hard, but it was easy because Dan had laughed and he didn't know where I was coming from, even though he sort of suspected, I think, like I suspected, because just then it occurred to me that me and Dan were trying to get him to kill himself. Or if he wouldn't do it, we'd have to do it for him. All because he was afraid, which was why he deserved to die. So he didn't want to look over the edge, because if he didn't throw himself over, then we might. But he couldn't very well not look over the edge, because that's where it was, and he couldn't be afraid of it, not when we weren't. And besides, we were his friends, and didn't he trust us? So he had to. But then I realized that I had been afraid before, and he, John, had helped me. And if I was afraid, and he was afraid, who was Dan to try to get him, John, to kill himself just because he was afraid? And I realized that it should be me and John against Dan. So I told Dan that we should all look over the edge to see if it was there, because I wasn't sure either. And then Dan admitted that he really didn't know himself, and I knew he lied, so I was sure we should make him die. And so we all walked over to the edge. But as we got there, I realized I was in the middle, and maybe it was them against me. So I backed off and John laughed and Dan laughed, and just to show them I wasn't afraid, even though I was more terribly scared than I had ever been, I laughed. But I wasn't convinced and I didn't think they were. And Dan asked me, are you going to look over the edge or aren't you? So I said he should look over the edge first and tell me if he saw it. And then John said the same thing. And Dan laughed at the both of us because he really was afraid. But he couldn't let us know, even though right there, he gave it away worse than he ever could have.
This is Freeman Dyson, and you're listening to Tears of the Gods on WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio.
You know, there are many passages from the Satanic Bible that deal with evolution, even in the book's introduction itself. There's no doubt that LaVey was directly influenced by Darwinian evolution when he established the Church of Satan, an anti-God religion. This is why it's so important for us to spread the truth about Genesis. We must oppose the anti-God religion of evolution that pervades our education systems worldwide.
Virtually everyone who looks at her to do a double take.
I must admit, I do get a certain perverse pleasure out of it.
Thank you.
giving it to you like it is. You ain't never, never in your life have you heard of this jockey come through here like me. So when you call up here, don't call up here talking about you a good disc jockey or you the best. You know what? You know how y'all talk, you know. You know how you talk that I ever heard. Know what I mean? Because I'm telling you, don't call me no disc jockey, because I'm not a disc jockey. I'm a human radio station. Now don't forget that, because it makes me mad for y'all to disfigure me like you do. Don't classify me with these Rudy poops around here. Now these folks on all these other radio stations in Canada or whatever they're supposed to be, then they may be disc jockeys. But you put all of them on the radio when I'm on at one time, and I'll wear their head out. All of them, put them all on at the same time, and I will wear their head out. Now that's them people what you call disc jockeys. Know what I mean? I'm a human radio station, and I don't want to have to repeat this no more.
You've been listening to the Plastic Sushi Strawberries in Time sound collage. That's right, it's no mere radio program. It's a sound collage. Each week, a different theme. And audio clips from movies, TV shows, documentaries. As we head this evening, a BBC documentary on the discovery of lysergic acid diethylamide, LSD, a powerful hallucinogen, by Dr. Albert Hoffman, a Swiss chemist in 1943. We began that last set in our Numbers theme of this evening with the Penguin Cafe Orchestra and Numbers 1 to 4 from their Terry album. And then it was my Plastic Sushi Whole Lot of Hungry remix of three different Beatles versions of Revolution. I was Revolution number 19, and we also had Brian Eno and David Byrne and Jimmy Page in there. And then it was Aphex Twin number 9, my Plastic Sushi LSD Dare remix, with me narrating bits of a novel that I wrote when I was back in college. About a very bad LSD trip, yes. Reasons not to do something like that. Particularly if the mood is wrong. And then we finish things off with Goldfrapp in number 1. The Alan Brax and Fred Falke Tears of the Gods remix. And backing me up right now is Brian Eno for one final version of a track from Ambient One, Music for Airports. But what I've done here, this is the first track, but I've sonically reversed it. I'm playing it backwards. Like if I took the vinyl album and I turned off the motor and I moved it with my finger backwards. Thanks so much for having me and my mixes in your home, car, computer, or wherever else you're listening. Be it Smithtown, New York, or Beverly on the North Shore of Massachusetts, or just a few hundred feet away from our Curtis Hall broadcasting location in Medford. Yes, Chuck Yu and Diane. I expect to be back again next week, and I think we're going to have a Halloween episode. I think we're going to have two Halloween episodes because it is such a fun musical holiday with monsters and demons and candy and sweet things. Yeah, that's what we're going to be doing next week here at 8 p.m. WMFO. in Medford, 91.5 on your FM dial. I don't know what's happened to smoke breaks. Those guys aren't in here yet, but we'll let this play out and then turn you on to Rick Deckard.